Hello all, welcome to Awakenings Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Mache, and that was a little bit of Thunderbeat, who, by the way, will be on the program this month again. We're always blessed to have her, and that was Golden Sun. Amazing CD, amazing. Would make a wonderful soundtrack, hint, 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 all who are listening. So welcome all you wonderful radiant light beings in the chat room and all that are listening via the phone lines that are lighting up as well. And I want to give a little hello to Richard Footed of Cosmic Dimensions Radio, cosmicdimensions.com, who also streams us live at the same time. So we have listeners, as you know, from around the globe, and it's wonderful to hear and connect with all of you. And I also want to give a warm embrace to all that will be listening later in the archives. You're with us still. I know sometimes I get emails of people saying, oh, I wish I could listen live, and it seems so fun, and the people in the chat seem really great, and I would have loved to call in. But just know that you are with us in consciousness. You are right here, right now with us, other dimensionally in another form. So you're here, and hopefully some of you that listen by archive, I know some of you actually prefer it, or some of you actually listen via the internet live when we're broadcasting and then re-listen via archive. So whatever your preference, it's all good. If you would like to join us sometime live, if you can squeeze it in, or listen by work, a lot of people listen at work, put your headphones on. You know, Awakenings airs every Wednesday and Friday, or we broadcast live every Wednesday and Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. And we do have a great traveling crew with us. Also, just a little info for everyone as everyone kind of gets snuggled in and settled in here. Hope you have your tea, your coffee, whatever, you know, get your beverage, get your foodies, just to have a great time and relax, and to call in and share too if you like to. The call-in number here at Awakenings is 347-539-5122, and I'll give that to you again. That's 347-539-5122. And of course, if you're in the chat and you have a comment that you really want me to see or a question, I love questions and comments. I love the interaction. I don't want to be just a talking something over here in my little universe, connecting with all of your universes, creating one big universe. So if you do have a question or comment in the chat, type in caps. It's easier for me to see, and that's really great. And also, we have a lot of great guest ideas, people contacting me, and I love it, I love it. But just to make it a little more expedient, a little easier, a little more grace and ease. If you have a suggested topic or suggested guest, or your media company or publicist wants to email the person, the go-to person is Linda, and that's Linda at selfinlight.com, and Linda at selfinlight.com. And if you want to get on the Awakenings newsletter, email list, insights list, it's awakeningsradio@gmail.com, and that's awakeningsradio@gmail.com. And my personal site, selfinlight.com, let me see, Twitter at Awakenings Tweet, and Facebook Awakenings Radio. So there you have it. Lots of ways to stay connected and also to share. It's really kind of makes the show what it is. When you're calling in or emailing, you know, when you're keeping connected, we have some people that have uploaded some great videos and great ideas as well on the Awakenings Radio page on Facebook. So it's just, I love it. I go to that page and I love seeing the interaction and, sometimes some guest suggestions, sometimes some great videos that are very uplifting or inspiring. We had one listener at one point put up some things that were helping her during this time of transition and change. And how many have you been feeling this energy change, this shift? We've really gone into a next level or a high gear. So I'd love to hear about that, hear how that's unfolding for all of you. And the thing is, this whole idea with 2012, and our guests will get more into that, is that it's already been happening. We are in the shift. By the time we get to the 2012, you know, some new forms will be in place. We'll have a better idea of what exactly is happening on a mainstream level. But the shift has been happening, and we're in a major quickening of this. Tammy in the chat is saying, huge shift, Michelle. Yeah, tell me about this, because I've been feeling it, and colleagues, clients, friends, many people are feeling it as well. There's just much an intensification of energy. I'm imagining when Uranus goes into Aries, it's going to be even more amazing on an individual level. Because what's part of what's happening is where we are opening more and downloading more, receiving more, and acting from these the transpersonal energies, the more expanded energies of consciousness. So that's a big part of what is happening, and why, you know, the body template, the mind body, has to get used to these energies. In a sense, our software is being updated is another way of looking at it. So there is a DNA shift, RNA, or there's a rewriting, you know, of the pattern of relating and even being. So it's universal, but it's structural, it's energetic. Many are feeling it and not knowing what's going on. So what's great is when you have the awareness of what is going on. And Tammy's saying energy management stuff. Yeah, Gary's saying knee deep in the shift. Yeah, I always say you can shift consciously, so that's the shift, or the unconscious is when you step in the shift without the F. Right? Is Michael Emmanuel in the chat? Yes, you are. Remember, Michael Emmanuel had to correct me on my I left out the F. I said the T. So anyway, but you got what I mean. Let's see. Woo-woo is a metaphysical or an energy explanation, Crystal Annie. The woo-woo, yeah, we're getting into the woo-woo. Yeah, well, the woo-woo is wee-wee. It's real. Yeah, so sometimes you have to kind of ground the energy, but whatever. It's what the main thing to really get the empowerment on this is to acknowledge what's happening. That's the first thing. Once you acknowledge and you look around and you also get some like-minded individuals saying, yeah, this is what's happening, this is what I'm experiencing, right away that grounds you, because it exteriorizes you. You don't continue to interiorize and think something's wrong with me, what's going on, you know, what's happening, is this me, is something wrong with me. You start, you know, when that starts happening, your energy starts imploding, and it's a little downward spiral. So when you connect with others of like mind or understanding, you spiral upward and outward, and you actually bump to that next level more easily, or let's say with some grace and ease. Let's hear it for grace and ease. I'm all about that right now. I want the shifts, everything, grace and ease. Let me remain aligned. Allow me to reattune or attune or tune in to the alignment so that I am in my perfect flow, my divine right flow. And may I attract others. And of course I'm attracting others that are in their flow. So we are flowing together, even though it's a fast flow. We're in a Ferrari. And if there's a faster car than that, you know, maybe a rocket ship. Anyway, I do see our guests in the chat, so I don't want to chat more. I do want to welcome Lanai Lee, and let me just say, probably some of you have already gotten a little bit of her, a taste of her, and info on her for being in the chat, but for those that are listening by phone and will be listening to the archives later, Lanai Lee is the author of Skulls of Salvation. She has an amazing story, which I really want to get into, that she's gone through a lot of adversity and it seems it's kind of come out of the other side. In 2001, David, her husband, dared her to write a poem, and out of curiosity, she posted in an online poetry forum. The feedback was so positive, she kept writing. At first, she just wrote poems and short stories and finally novels. And she has a disability, which we will get into, and because all of her work is typed one-handed because of the specific disabilities. And Lanai gives credit to the grace of God, which has helped her overcome immense adversity, hold her head high. And in her words, she claims she won't quit until she hits the bestseller list. I love it. I love it. Those of you that want to connect with Lanai, it's Lanai Lair, Lanai's Lair. com. And please welcome to the program, Lanai Lee. Hello, Lanai.
Hi, how are you, Michelle?
I'm doing great. I'm glad we connected.
Yes, and pardon my voice, I've got a cough.
That's okay. So let me get your email address right, that way people can put a link in the website and of your website in the chat room, and then also for those that are listening by phone, it's Lanai.
My husband's in my chat room. Put the link to my website in the chat room. He's doing
okay. Okay, and can you just tell me it's Lanai?
Linnea.
Okay, Linnea. Okay, so the website, let me make sure I have it right, is LanaiSlair.com.
Let me spell it because I'm not sure. LanaiSlair.com.
Perfect. Okay. And how do you pronounce it? Linnea?
Linnea's Lair. Yeah.
Okay, great. Linnea's Lair. Okay, perfect. All right, good. So a lot of times that gives just everybody a little bit more of a feel that they can be listening, plus also looking at the website, and then those that are joining later or by phone or archive are able to get your website easily. So, Linnea, I'd love for you first, because I don't know much about you, so for our listeners as well as myself, if you could just start at your first awakening.
My first awakening was when I was 8, when my mom died.
Okay.
My second awakening was a year later, because my dad was in the Navy. And he came home. My grandmother hated him. She didn't contact him when my mom died. And he took my grandmother to court, and him being in the Navy in the 60s, not having that stable home life. I lost my dad, too, so... And my mother's mother that had the custody of me. The third awakening was when I acknowledged that I knew she was a black witch.
Mm.
And they are for real, believe you me. I live with a lot, I know.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was, okay, so your story is your mother died, when you were 9 years old, and was from a massive stroke.
Correct. The same kind
wow.
that I had. I had the same one when I was 35.
That's so young.
She.
How old was your mother when she had the stroke?
38.
That's so young to have a stroke, isn't it?
Yes, and strokes run like wildfire through my family because both my grandmothers, my mother, and a cousin... and myself, we all had the same stroke, but only one survived, and that was me.
Whoa.
And I had, you can look at me, and you cannot tell I had a stroke. I mean, I have no paralysis. And the reason I just type one-handed is because I lost minute abilities with my left hand, like typing or playing the piano like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it did take my ability to walk, and I'm in a wheelchair, but hey, just slow me down.
That's it. So that must have been really difficult for you. That's such a young age for you to go through that and lose your mother. Can I ask you, were you close to your mother?
Very close. Very. See, before, I was an only child, and before me, she had another child, my brother, that was 4 years older than I was. And he died. I'm not even sure how he died when he was 3 days old. So I was a very much wanted child.
Mm-hmm. So your brother died when he was 3 days old. How were you? How old were you?
I wasn't here yet.
Oh, you weren't. Oh, okay.
Oh, he was 4 years older than me.
Oh, four. Okay, got it. Got it. So your mother, okay, died of a stroke. And who else died of a stroke in your family?
My paternal grandmother, my maternal grandmother, and a cousin.
Okay. All female?
All female.
Very interesting. Wow. And if I can ask you, did you have any warning that you were going to have a stroke? Or how did
it? Well, you know, they have these stroke warning signs. I didn't have one. The only thing I remember, I was hot. I was so hot. And that's all I remember. And that was June 22nd of 1992. And the next thing I remember, it was September 21st, 1992. So I was in a coma for 3 months.
Boy. So that was it. And were you alone when it happened?
Pretty much, yes. I was a restaurant manager at the time, which was not the best job because of the stress. And I was also in a bad marriage at the time, which was ending. And all the stress just got me, I guess. Because I'm still not good with stress.
Do you feel that your stroke put you in a different direction?
Absolutely. Yes, I do. Because, you know, when I came out of my coma, the doctor said he never saw anybody with a will to live like me. And I just figured to myself, well, the first half of my life was awful. The second half has got to be better.
Good for you.
And
exactly.
So far it has been.
That's one, you know, that's a really good point, because a lot of times we don't have control over, you know, when we're growing up, where we're living or how we're living. But
right.
When we do leave that environment, you know, that's a very good, my point of view is a very good posture to take. It's like, you know, I can change it. I can have a different experience now. Now, when you were growing up and I do want to get back a little bit to the beginning of this. I'm just fascinated because you were actually in a coma. Do you have recollection of that as all, of any of that?
Yes. They say your mind is inactive. They're lying. It is. I can remember dreams I had when I was in my coma. And I died 5 times, obviously. And they brought me back 5 times. But one time, I remember an out-of-body experience. I didn't make it to the tunnel or the light, but I saw my body. So then I was back. It was like a split second, but it was just too real.
Did you have any, as you look back, were you aware of what was going on?
Sometimes I would say I was like semi-comatose. I could hear what was going on around me, but I couldn't yet communicate.
Okay, so you were aware?
Somewhat, yes, but I don't think I was 100% aware. It's like, you know, when you're asleep and you wake up for a few minutes and then go back to sleep.
But that's interesting. So you did have some awareness. So it was like a sleep.
Right.
We do have a question in the chat. Do you have Please Awakening? Ask her, Nick. Do you have a nickname?
Oh, brother, that has got to be my husband. Yes.
It's got to be, yes.
Yeah. All right. I'm in a wheelchair. I sit. My sign is Taurus. I'm a bull. So thus we have Sitting Bull.
Woo! I love it.
But see, I think that is also a key to a good marriage. My husband now, we've been married almost 16 years. And we could make each other laugh, unlike my first two marriages. All I wanted to do was work a separate shift to get away from him. And David, he had a motorcycle accident in 82, and he was in a coma for 16 months, and they didn't much think he survived, but he did. And now I got to put up with him all these years.
Sounds like a good match. You get... Now, let's go back a little to the beginning. So what happened, obviously, when your mom died, then your father took care of you, right?
No.
My
grandmother, my mother's mom took care of me.
Mm.
My dad was in the Navy.
Okay.
And when he came home on leave, he was stationed in Okinawa, I believe. And when he came home a year later, he didn't even know that his wife was dead. Because my grandmother never contacted the Red Cross to contact him.
Mm.
So he came back and found, you know, his wife was dead. His mother-in-law had his only child, me. And she kept me because, you know, in the 60s, everything more or less had to be perfect, the home life and all that stuff. And he didn't have the home life, so she got custody.
Mm. And you didn't have any say-so in this?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
At nine, uh-uh.
Mm. I know, because now they kind of ask. Now, let me ask you, when your grandmother, was there a grandfather in the picture?
My grandmother had been married 7 times. And my grandfather and her, that was her first husband. They had been divorced for years and years and years and years. So I knew my grandfather, and I visited him occasionally, but nothing close, you know.
Close, okay. And then you say the experience you had with your grandmother was a black witch. Can you share a little bit of that with us and how you came to know?
Well, I can only describe one thing that I remember vividly, because after my father took her to court for custody of me, she told me she'd fix him, she'd get rid of him. Well, I knew she could physically harm him, and I begged her not to do so. So she put a spell on him, and my dad went back to Japan. And he was in Japan from 1967 until the year 2000. And I didn't see him for that long.
That's a long time.
Oh, yeah, and I'm the one that brought him back to the States. Because, you know, I kind of had to know my father, you know.
We have a question for you because we have an admirer of your, Lanaya Lee, of your accent. Where are you from?
I am from North Carolina.
Okay.
I'm a proud Southern girl.
Yeah, it's beautiful, though. It's a nice draw.
Well, it ain't pretty here now. It's kind of cold.
So is it?
Yeah, last week I was running the air conditioning. This week the heat, thus the cold.
What was it like growing up with your grandmother? How did you experience that?
Well, I was with her from the time until I was 14. And then she abandoned me. And
how did she abandon you?
She married this guy she met through some Lonely Hearts Club, and he lived in Arizona, and she was going to uproot me, and we were going to go to Arizona. And for what I knew, this guy could have been a serial killer, and I wouldn't go. So she left me.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a month later.
And who did she leave you with?
Me, myself, and I.
You mean just oh, my God, where did she leave you at?
In a 13-room empty house.
Just left you there and left?
Uh-huh. And then I picked up the phone and called social services.
Wow.
Because I didn't know what else to do.
Anai, oh, my God. So she just up and left you?
Right. And
there.
A month later, she came back without her husband. He was never seen again.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what she did with him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And was she able then to have custody of you again once you were...
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I wouldn't go back with her. That was one thing. And the other, they said she was incompetent to raise a teenager.
So but did you ever see her?
Yeah, I saw her occasionally, but, you know, I didn't want to get really close, you know. But
yeah,
it all worked out for the best. I finally got sent to a boarding school, which was really great, because that's where I got the remainder of my education, and I graduated my junior year. I mean, kids always think about getting out of school, but because my mother was a teacher, quitting school for me was not an option. So I hunkered down and took a load in my junior year and made it and graduated.
Boy, now I just hear, because let's go through. So you have this with your, obviously your mother dying when you're 9. Your father wasn't around. You have to go to stay with your grandmother. Your grandmother gets custody. Sounds like she's not the best influence, and that's putting it mildly. Right?
You would have had to have met her to appreciate her, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Then you really, kind of had to push through. It looks like a lot of adversity. What kept you going through? I mean, through molestation, your father not being around, and you've got, getting married, then divorced, you have these miscarriages, married at 30, then a stillborn daughter, then 5 years later your husband leaves you, then you file bankruptcy, then the stroke. What kept you going?
Well, I've always been a firm believer that life is never guaranteed to deal you a fair hand. And life goes on regardless of what adversity you're faced with, unfortunately. So I'm the type of person, I go with the flow. And it just, and now I wouldn't change a thing, because everything I went through made me who I am today.
But did you ever, because I know people get so down, in much small, I mean, just by what you're sharing and what the little bit I've read about your path, your where you came from, your story, so many more people just of less adversity just give up, or say, oh, woe is me. And it seems like there's this something in you that just says I'm.
Maybe it's
like
because
you said,
I'm a Taurus.
Cool. I know, yeah. Maybe it's a Taurus.
Yeah, I'm a double Taurus. My son and moon is in Taurus. So maybe that's
mother.
Where there's a termination.
But even when your mom at 9, or your grandmother rather, left when you were a teenager and it went off with somebody, and you said you didn't want to go anyway because you didn't trust the guy, how you had the presence of mind to call social services? I mean, did a neighbor tell you? Did anybody come to your aid, or did you just think of this on your own?
I thought of it on my own. I had to grow up early. I mean, fast. When my mom passed, my grandmother went totally out of her mind, and our maid, my grandmother ran a rest home, and we had a maid, and the maid and I picked out everything for my mom's funeral. My grandmother did not even have the ability to do that at the time. So I know my mom had always talked about dying. I mean, because she put it, death as part of life, how true that is. And I had remembered certain things she said she wanted and didn't want, so I stepped up to the plate.
And you say your grandmother wasn't available. What was she just like?
She was just tore apart. I mean, she...
Okay.
I mean, she just went absolutely nuts there for a couple of days. I think
so
that 1 minute is when I grew up. I grew up fast.
Well, when I'm hearing what you say, it's that saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it sounds like through each of these instances, your spirit, your will, the inspirar, that spiritual energy within you just got stronger and stronger and stronger.
When I was little, my mother always used to tell me that when I became an adult, I would embark on a special journey. At the time, I did not have any idea what she was talking about, but I think the road I'm on now is what she was talking about.
And let me ask you, because I was thinking that myself, I'm just wondering, do you feel, and maybe even know inside, that all that you've overcome, that you somehow can help others to overcome whatever they're
absolutely,
going
through? Absolutely, absolutely, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say every cloud has a silver lining, because that's not the way it works.
Thank you very much, because you're being honest.
But, unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to hear this. Life goes on. And if you don't want to lose your sanity, you have to go on. I mean, you know, the loss of my kids and all that. Yeah, it still hurts, but hey, they were a part of me. They exist. They're waiting on me, and one day I will be with them.
Mm-hmm. But while you're here, you have to get to your own, right? Your own path, your own work.
Exactly. Like, before I had my stroke, when I was 35, I could sing. I mean, if American Idol had been in the 70s, I would have tried out. But, all right, then my stroke, it paralyzed one of my vocal cords, and I lost that ability. And I always took it, I lost the ability because I didn't use it. When I found I had a literary gift, is what I call it. Yes, I'm using it. This is my destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Of what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, because so you started writing the poetry, and you moved from that to short stories and novels, and perhaps on some level, some of your greatest, you know, in a sense, also spiritual work or awareness work, also you began to turn to. How did the books and how did your focus on Atlantis come about, and the series of books that you later began writing? How did that come into?
It all came from my mom. She introduced me to Plato's Atlantis when I was 5, and I was always obsessed with it. So when I was going to try my hand at a novel, I decided to go with something I was really interested in, more or less kind of obsessed with. So when I started the series, it was going to be one book. When my mind shut up, it was 5.
And what drew you to the Atlantean story?
My mom. I mean, I was just always obsessed with it. The mystery, I guess. It's one of the biggest mysteries of mankind that's never been solved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I am such a sucker for a mystery. But no, I mean, when I first started writing it, you know, my book, the series starts out on the continent of Atlantis. And my main character, his name is Archimedes. He is the last king of Atlantis. He had as an untapped source of special power. His mother, the queen, knew the truth, but his father, the king, didn't, thus making his father fearful of him at times. And his father has an advisor, which is my villain. His name is Yurik. And he also has the same abilities as Archimedes. So Yurik, because of their abilities, they both survive devastation. Yurik has this thought in his head, if I can harness the powers of Archimedes along with my own powers, that would make me so powerful I'd become the master of the universe.
Mm.
My books are steeped in history, and my history is factual. The fun part was weaving the fantasy around the facts.
Mm. Now, do you feel, when you're writing these books, do you feel that something comes over you and the information is just given to you?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Yes. I'll give you one example. Now, this totally blew me away, and I swear I didn't know this. In my, of course, I had to bring, you know, aliens into it. Because I do believe there's something out there. We'd be mighty, mighty arrogant if we thought, out of all the universes and galaxies out there, that we're the only living beings. That's mighty arrogant. But when I was writing the books, my aliens are from the constellation of Orion, the three stars in Orion. And they came from one of the dying stars. You know, which that is fiction, but, you know, it made for good writing. But anyway, when I was doing research for the second book, I found out, I went back to research on my own about 2012 because I'm just so interested in it. One of the things are the three pyramids on the Giza Plateau. When the galactic alignment occurs on December 21st, 2012, the pyramids on the Giza Plateau are in total trajectory of how the three stars of Orion's belt are going to be in December 21st, 2012. That blew me away because I had no idea.
Well, the thing, it's interesting. If you look, I'm thinking of pyramids as well as certain sundials around the world. Apparently, this configuration did happen, and this is kind of Celtic lore, thousands of years ago, or at the time of, you know, Atlantis. Maybe it was other dimensional. I don't know. A lot of Celtic lore says it was thousands of years ago, or was the time of the pyramids.
It has to be. It only happens every 25,800 years.
Exactly. So that it's interesting what you're saying, that Orion, because that is a that constellation is a gateway. It's a portal of light, and we have been, and I don't want to get your take on this. We have apparently been receiving little drips of what is going to happen in the full galactic configuration, if you will, or galactic alignment. But we have been receiving little drips of this light energy bit by bit to acclimate us more to what is going to be happening in that perhaps more, I don't know if I want to say extreme or more complete, maybe complete alignment. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the Mayans were the only society that I have found that have given a two-way scenario. It either means end of days or an awakening. That's why I appreciated the title of your show so much. And I honestly do believe the awakening is happening now as we speak.
Yes, because exactly.
Over the past 10 years, more people are more in touch with their spirituality than ever. And why? Because we're mighty close to the winter equinox of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the awakening is we're going to remember what the word humanity means.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has to be with all that Aquarian energy. And actually started around, I mean, I'm sure it started sooner, but recognizably was in the late 80s during the harmonic convergence when we started harmonizing or moving energetically towards, as you say, Lanai, that humanity. What does it mean to be connected? Because we were living, you know, on a big level, so many people living so separate or, as you're saying, not aware of our humanity.
I mean, you look back in history. The Mayans, their long calendar, which is the Dresden Codex, it is divided into five parts of 5,000 years. Fourth passed, one the fifth. The fifth ends in 2012. And the Mayans think history occurs in cycles. Mm-hmm. And the long calendar, if you look at it, and really look at it and study it, I mean, they even saw where their civilization was going to fall according to the legends and lore of the Mayans. You know, what could they do? And I think it started with the Spanish conquistadors. That's where it started. But that wasn't the only reason I think they went down. There was a lot of contributing factors, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we're at the same road again. Okay, are we going to go left or are we going to go right, you know?
But let me ask you, what do you, in your research and what you've been receiving, what do you think the difference is this time? What is making this time different?
More people are paying attention. I really believe that. Because I don't think anybody likes the idea of facing death. Me, I'm not scared of death. I'm just scared of how it's going to happen, the pain. But I'm not. Death, that's part of life. But, you know, I think people are really scared. I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, even as close as last year, this guy on Wall Street predicted the economic collapse as part of the 2012 scenario. And it happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems these little stair steps coming up to the big thingy, a lot of them are coming true. But I think the destiny is going to be left up to us.
Yeah. I keep saying one thing is that we're not recognizing, as I call it, mitigating consciousness. That, like, just like what you're saying, that more people are waking up or more people are paying attention. I think things like what we're doing right now, look where you're at. You know, I'm in the L.A. area. You're in North Carolina. We're meeting, you know, we're meeting with hundreds of people that are listening, you know, in the chat room, on the phone, thousands that are listening via Internet, and thousands more that will be listening in the archives. So we are able to connect, like, right, like I feel that they weren't in the past. And I feel that that's changing things, or making the what could happen less and less extreme, making it more on, perhaps on a more life enhancing.
I totally agree. I really do, because.
Do you? Okay, good.
Yes, I do, because when the Mayans went down, you know, we didn't have a telephone and all this. We could pick up and say, guess what I just found out happened in the other town, you know. We couldn't do that.
Yeah. And I think, too, to say, you know, well, you probably heard, because you were in the chat earlier, and I was saying, you know, it really helps to know you're not losing your mind when you start saying, hey, I'm going through this, or energetically this is happening, or I'm being awakened at 2 or 3 a.m., and, you know, and I'm up doing this, and I you know, and you know, if you were alone, you might be thinking something's wrong.
Right.
Right?
One of the reasons I wrote the Of Atlantis series, and I specifically wrote on the Mayan prophecies, is because I feel it's going to be left up to us. It's going to be a choice, and I was hoping that people read my series or my books, that they would come to realize the same thing, that it's going to be left up to us. And maybe I'm playing role of messenger.
But now, when you say left up to us, what do you think that people need to do that perhaps they're not doing? And maybe what would be your message in that, through the reading of the books? What do people need to do, start doing?
Well, the first thing they need to do is pay attention to what the ancients left us. Look around.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing they need to do is to take a crash course in how to treat each other.
Mm.
Look at the world. I mean, we live in a... this world's in dire straits. I don't ever remember seeing the world like this. I'm 52 years old, and I don't ever remember seeing it like this. Even in the late 60s, when there was, what was that college, that place in California, that college that had all those, anyway, it was a bunch, you know, the hippies and all this stuff.
Right.
You know, everybody thought, my Lord, you know, they're the devil's children or something. And really, they loved peace. I mean, you know, I was one of them, I mean. I'm not going to, you know, deny that. But I think it's because I honestly, back then the world wasn't in the turmoil it is now.
Right.
And it's really scary.
Do you feel but the trauma is having to happen, do you think, to wake people up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not finished yet. We've got another 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen in that 3 years?
Yeah. Well, and again, I think is what you're saying is the more people that wake up and kind of get with the program, get out of the conditioned responses here, the automated responses, that things don't have to get so extreme. You know, it's like you said, I love what you say, pay attention. If people just start paying attention, we don't have to have, big blow-ups. We don't.
If people would stay, like me, I learned a lot of facts after I read the book. And the facts that I've learned will make your blood run cold. And
tell
if people,
me.
Okay, you ready for
tell
this?
Us. We're ready.
Okay, in a village in France, the name of the village, Hondea, I believe it's how you say it. In this village, there is a cross that belongs to the Knights Templar. In the base of the cross are symbols that represent the galactic alignment that is to occur in 2012. All right, the Egyptian pyramids, you know, the Orion thing. Then you've got New Zealand, you've got an Aborigines tribe, the Morales. 4,000 years ago, they said, pertaining to this galactic, the same alignment now, that the protection of the earth would be no more. The curtain would be torn.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't we got a hole in our ozone layer?
Haven't we got what? Say that again?
I said, don't we have a hole in the ozone layer?
Yeah.
The curtain has been torn.
Mm-hmm.
So even if something devastating does happen, which would include like gamma ray bursts or solar flares, we have no protection. And if you want to go as far as Revelation goes, all right, the galactic alignment is going to be the Milky Way, the Earth, and the Sun in total trajectory. All right, they say the center of our universe is the Milky Way. They also say the center of our universe is a black hole. And because of the unstableness of the black hole, there's immense gravitational pull. Okay, with the hole in the ozone layer, who's not to say the pull could be so strong it pulls magma out of the core of the earth, you know, pushing up in our atmosphere. Thus, it rains down back on earth as fire and brimstone. There you have Revelation. That's just a possible scenario. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just trying to make people, see. This could be a plausible thing.
Yeah. Part of what I get when I look at stuff like that metaphysically is the tear or the not protection is definitely also that the veil is lifted and will be lifted. So there are things that happen more quickly,
absolutely.
Right? Our by our consciousness, so a lot is in form, and people, even, I don't know if you're seeing this where you live, but I know I am, and people that I'm in contact with around the world are seeing that people, even if they're not spiritually integrated or metaphysically inclined, are having many psychic experiences or experiences of healing energy through their hand, and a lot of them is freaking them out. It's like, oh my God, how do I?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is also, we're not going to be shielded from the truth of the full truth of who we are as spiritual light beings, galactic beings, star seeds, however you want to put it. Whether you want to believe it or not, you may be having psychic experiences.
Well,
you may not believe in that.
The human DNA, one strand of DNA contains thousands of chromosomes. All right, one strand of DNA, they have identified all the chromosomes but one. And one of the scientists said the chromosome they could not identify, they couldn't identify it because it was not of this earth. So you think about that.
Well, what I think is the aliens people are waiting is us. People are going to find out that
probably.
You are what you're looking for, or you are what you've been fearing.
Exactly, and I mean, you know, the government says, okay, we're not going to, you know, they won't, you know, admit to, you know, just like Area 51, they won't admit to aliens, and they say it's because they're afraid that, you know, people go nuts. I wouldn't go nuts. I want to know. I'm curious. God gave me the ability to question, and I question, and I want to know.
You want to know. Well, you're kind of in the few, right?
I mean, I'm not scared of what I find out. I am more entranced, more curious about it than scared.
And what, you're curious, are you excited about the changes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If something does happen, catastrophic, on the winter equinox, of 2012, all I can say is we asked for it. That's exactly.
Well, because people aren't getting not, the program.
Right, not noticing the environment around them. I mean, that's all it takes. And to have an open mind. And you were talking about people experiencing things scaring them. As of right now, only 15% of the human brain is known. That leaves 85%. That's a big margin of what we could potentially do with our minds. And that's why I believe, you know, some people can do telekinesis. Some people are psychic, you know. I believe everybody has the ability, just more people are in tune to that part of the brain than the others.
But now, do you feel that that's going to be a big opening for people, that is? Are you seeing that, too, that that's going to happen no matter what?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it's predestination. We've come so far as, like, in technology or whatever. And in my belief, I believe the Atlanteans were hybrid. I really do. And I believe that we had the ability thousands and thousands of years ago, and somewhere along the line it got lost. And like it's an awakening, we're waking up again to what we once were and what we can be. And I believe that with everything in my being.
Now tell me, because I had an so let me ask you, if someone, is it important to start from the whole series, the Atlantis series, or is there one book that you say is a,
They're all connected. They're all connected. The only difference I did in book five, I left an open ending and introduced new characters just in case there was a cry for book six. I wasn't dumb. This series, if you ever read it, I guarantee you, you will be hooked.
Okay.
Because my publicist, she was blown away by what she read. And see, I think what really blows her away, I've never had any, you know, traditional training to write. I just sat down one day and I could do it. So I do it.
Yeah, I'm curious about, because I've had an experience with the, it's a psychic intuitive, with the crystal skull. So you do touch upon that. You want to jump in with that a little bit? And
I don't touch upon it. That's what half the book is about.
Okay.
It's about the doomsday
prophecy. Well, one part of the book is, right?
The whole book is on the Mayan doomsday prophecy and the skull.
And the skulls, okay.
Yeah, part of the book is about the search for the skulls, the six remaining ones. That we think there's only seven found. They may have them all, as far as I know. But no, they're made out of quartz crystal. And the Mitchell Hedges skull, that's supposedly the lead skull. And there's 13 in all. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, you put 12 in the circle, put the 13th in the middle, and the origins of the universe and mankind will be revealed. And, you know, which I think is possible because on the Mitchell Hedges skull, when it was found in the 20s in Belize, some of the soul that was owned, it was in one of the parts of the skull embedded. They did radiocarbon dating on the skull, on the soul, 50,000 years. We're talking quartz crystal, the second hardest substance known to man.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me that the ancients carved these things with bones and copper.
No. No. Now, is that the skull from the archaeologist?
Yes. Mitchell
okay,
Hedges.
That's...
She, yeah, she, her name was Anna Mitchell Hedges. She found the skull as a child. She just recently died, and I don't, she lived in Canada.
Yeah, that must have been the one that I, the author of the book Sacred Sites, I had, five of us were selected to go read and work with the skull, the energy of the skull.
Oh, gosh. How are you?
I know. Oh, my God, let me tell you, when I was asked to do this, I had no knowledge of this. This is actually the best skull. The one I did see the one in the British
Now, did the skull you looked at, was it in two parts? Did the jaw move?
Yeah.
That's the Mitchell Hedges.
Yeah, that's the one. Let me tell you, though, the story, because for 2 weeks, almost three weeks, 2.5 weeks, before I saw that got to go, the Mayans were in my healing office. And it's amazing, powerful energy. I didn't know what was going on. I called the guy and said, listen, I got the Mayans in my office. They're like, intense energy. He's like, oh, that's interesting. That happens to a lot of people. And I saw where the skull came from, what it was about. I got all these downloads on it. However, they did tell me, and although I did not do this because I told them this is not my karma, I don't want to get in the middle of this, they did tell me that the skull needed to be brought back to the Mayans. They wanted me to actually take the skull on the way there in the bus with five of us. And this is how trippy it is. Of course, I didn't do that because I am a risk taker, but not that much because, you know, I don't
right.
want to. But 2 weeks later, this woman, I was doing readings in a bookstore. She came in. She was a Mayan lady, walks up to me and started talking to me. And then she just looked at me and she said, why didn't you do what you were supposed to do? And
oh,
I
boy.
Said, yeah, exactly. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you know what I mean. And I said, what? She goes, about the skull. Why didn't you were to return it to our people? And I said, well, I said, I understand. I said, but I really, that's not my thing this lifetime. I didn't really want to get in the middle of, you know, going to put the jail.
No, I don't think you wanted the federal government chasing you.
Yeah, so I didn't do, but can you imagine 2 weeks later, 3 weeks at the most. I think it was like 2 weeks, actually.
Were you actually
I don't know.
In the presence of the skull?
I was, yeah. I got to
What'd
hold it.
What'd you feel?
I felt that, number one, there's an intense and immense amount of energy that comes from the skull that radiates around it, and specifically the back of the skull and above. And it's just an amazing, intense, subtle energy, very pulsating, very clear. There's a lot of light that comes from the skull. You immediately, if you're an intuitive or a sensitive, I can feel it again as I'm talking to you now, as you tap into it, you begin to see the, right back there again, the slab of some type of, I don't know, stone, or looks kind of concrete, high up. It could be the plateau of a pyramid. And a lot of foliage, like a jungle around it, and there is one person holding the skull and a few people, like six people, seven people around. people down at the bottom looking up, and that the skull is a vehicle to receive the insight or divine insight that's coming from above, from their galactic roots. So you immediately, when you connect in with the skull, you just start getting downloads. You also get very a bit lightheaded. I had a little buzzing or a little ringing in the ear, but not like tinnitus or something like that. Just you definitely become lighter. You feel lighter, more energized, and you definitely feel energy.
Who do you think created the skulls? I want
well,
to see if
I what I got was they were placed. And they were used as a divination tool.
Hey, Clay.
Let me go back to that. They're also ascending, and they're also for sending and receiving. Part of the reason a lot of people, when they touch it, especially even that woman, her father. I knew the story. Her father found this. He says that a Mayan elder gave him the skull. When they discovered it, they said, "You will be the caretaker." And I know that she had it for many, many years, and actually had bodyguards holding it. And apparently when people did try to take it, they were ended up being like transfixed. They couldn't move. They were like stuck, you know, they couldn't leave the house or leave the area. They just were kind of almost like a spell put on them. And what's interesting, when we went to go see it, the skull was traveling, and it went to this house of this stockbroker trader that created a gold pyramid. He traded and got all this gold, and instead of just taking the money for it, he took the actual gold and created a little pyramid, you know, for opportunities like this, I suppose. But it's also it's a transmitter. It's a sender and a receiver. And what I was told is that our vibrational frequency at that time, or many people that looked at it, if your vibrational frequency wasn't attuned, you wouldn't receive the messages. But it's also a transmitter. It's a receiver and a transmitter of light, energy, and information. Tell me, what's your thoughts?
The skulls were in Atlantis.
Yeah, were.
They were in Atlantis.
Yeah.
When I was writing the first book, I wrote a hypothesis somewhere that 5% of the population of Atlantis should have survived devastation, whether it be they were visiting relatives in other countries or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And they had nowhere else to go, so they had to go somewhere. And even in Mayan lore and legend, it's told about a white god that comes to the Mayan from the sea. He lived among the Mayan people for 10 years, teaching them how to simplify their lives. And he went back to the sea, saying he was going to go to his own country, which was in water. Now, that was what he said to them. And it wasn't like 3 years later the Spanish came. And then, being fair, of course, the Mayans greeted them like they would have the god, you know, the god they thought was the god.
Mm.
And thus started the downfall of the Mayan.
Interesting.
But now, something else you might want to think about, too. Quartz crystal. That is the same crystal that we use the microchips in our computers today.
That's right. But that's why I say they're transmitter, receiver. I mean, see. And the other thing that you bring up, which is interesting, when I did look at that skull, boy, I'll tell you, there is no, the one that I saw, which I'm so divinely blessed, is like one of the better ones. The one in the British Museum is more of a quartzy, it's more smoky, and it has a little crack in it. The one that I was with is Lanai is completely smooth. I don't even know how. There's no marking, no nicks, no. I mean, you can't even see how it was shaped or came into being. You know, it's and it's extremely clear.
Okay, even if they had our technology, say lasers, to cut it.
Right.
You wouldn't have saw a stop-start mark, but you would have felt one. And mm-hmm. the Mitchell Hedges, I've never seen it, but from what I have read and, you know, research showed it, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. It is perfect. Edgar Casey, I'm sure you know who he is, the sleeping prophet.
Yeah, yeah.
He, when he would go in his trances, would used to say he was guided by the High Council of Atlantis. He was the one that also said part of Atlantis would arise in 1968. That's the year they found the Bimini Road. And, you know, I do believe there was a High Council of Atlantis, but I believe the High Council of Atlantis weren't human.
Was what, Sid?
They were not human.
Yeah.
They were what, star seeds or from a different area of dimension?
The star seeds, yeah. But that's what many people are going to have to wake up and embrace is their star seed DNA, that you're seeded here to as messengers or to bring this message. In fact, when there are some places that I visited in New Mexico that there are portals, I'm telling you, all I know is that you walk to these areas that are like in the, there's petroglyphs there, hieroglyphs. And it just seems like a little crease or little opening on the side of like a little hill or mountain, but you walk in there, you lose time, you're gone. And
have you ever visited Machu Picchu?
I have not.
Oh, what I would give. But they say they closed a lot of that place off. Don't ask me why.
Now, I'm wondering, do you think that these places are going to be, they're already charged with energy, but I'm just wondering, as we're more and more in this quickening phase, if these places are going to have even more energy. What is your thought?
I believe that, because, I mean, Stonehenge is one, the mounds of Ireland that my ancestors built are two, the Great Wall of China, the Chinese I Ching is in there. I mean, you know, it's all around the world. It's not just the Mayans. The Mayans, they were just, I just became entranced with them. That's the only reason I wrote on them. But it's everywhere. I mean, I think in every ancient civilization, even Babylon, had reference to the galactic alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I don't know if they were trying to warn us or, you know, just tell us to be on guard, or that's why I say I think it's going to be up to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it, my understanding and perception is what you're talking about is to pay attention is to also step into your empowerment, your knowingness of the truth of who you are. People are not going to be able to, if you're seated with this insider information or this energy, you're not going to be able to play small or just play human being. You've got to step into your galactic knowing, you know.
Exactly. And there's also been a lot of controversy on the date when it was going to happen, what happened at midnight, on the date as it begins or when it ends. I think it's going to happen when the rays of the winter equinox hit the earth because of, you know, like the temples the Mayans built, the pyramids, the mounds, Stonehenge, they all have make a play on light on the winter equinox when the sun rises. And if anything's going to happen devastating or maybe just enough to wake us up even more, I think it'll be on sunrise.
And what do you feel that, from your research, that we're to be creating or co-creating? What are we to be doing?
Well,
you know, what is this shift about?
I think it's about peace and living in tranquility and living with Mother Earth, respecting the Earth, which that got flushed down the toilet way long time ago. But that's exactly what I think. We are children of whatever, whether it be the High Council of Atlantis or whatever. Mm-hmm. We are all connected in that way. And the earth is our home. Without the earth, there's a lot of people that haven't got anywhere to go. And maybe it's, you know, just getting back to honoring our origins and, you know, and treating each other with respect.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been, you know, little spats among, you know, like the ancients among tribes and stuff like that. But back then, you know, there wasn't the threat of nuclear holocaust and all this stuff. And maybe that's what we got to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, that we've died, we've been reborn, we're like 2 and 3 year old little kids going wild. Now we've got to grow up and learn exactly what it is we are and should be.
Yes, now do you feel, and from what you've received, that is possible? Because part of what I, you know, that, whatever you want to say, heaven, living heaven on earth, or the, you know, out of the harmonic convergence, out of harmonizing, we move into the converging flow where everybody comes together to live together, to get along, even if you don't agree, but tolerating the differences. Do you think that that's possible without something, let's just say it, cataclysmic? By what you've studied and what you've written, do you feel think that's possible?
The only thing I would say is I don't really know, because there are a lot of closed-minded people. And for this thing to occur, you have got to be open-minded.
Yeah.
And those of you, you know, those people that close their minds, they've got to remember, there are certain scenarios that logic does not have a key. Or hold
that what, say that again? The what?
There are certain situations and scenarios that logic does not, you know, have a place in. That's like,
that's my concern. How do we get those the mopies to come along? I mean, not everybody I know has to shift. There's a tipping point that's needed, but my guidance has been saying we're behind schedule.
Absolutely.
So okay.
It may take something cataclysmic to, you know, wake those people up. Especially if it occurs on that date, and especially if it has been foretold.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to wake a few people up, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because it seems like many of us are paying attention or being reminded to pay attention, and then others are not seeing it. And, you know, actually, Lanai, maybe that's also where your books come in, because you've blended, you know, the fictional with nonfictional. You've blended it in such a way that maybe it can open people's minds even to the possibility to think differently, just nudge them even subconsciously. Because I find, like you just said earlier, you have to be open-minded. And so if people are closed-minded, they're not even going to entertain what we're talking
about. Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, in the books are a lot of my own personal beliefs as far as history and, you know, the alignment and all that, what's going to happen. But what I did in books 1, 2, and 5, those are my fantasy. Books 3 and 4, they're more on a everyday problematic level to show that my theory could be plausible.
Mm-hmm. And now, just touch on that a little bit. How do you mean? In what way?
Well, I figured when I was writing the book, if I put reality into the books, you know, problems that we're faced with of today. Okay, like in book 2, I will say this. One of the deterrents is global warming and the hole in the ozone layer. That's factual.
Mm-hmm.
And I use stuff like that, you know, I wanted to wake people up, so, you know, look around. This really could happen, you know. There is a hole in the ozone layer, you know. And global warming.
To get people to see, to kind of connect the dots is what you're
exactly
saying.
Exactly, right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if my destiny was to be a messenger to help get this across. So be it. I'm glad in a way, if that is my destiny, I feel very honored. Because something sure got in me.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Oh, Diana's in the chat. No, somebody's saying that if you went through all those things, you found it endearing. No, Lanai Lee went through those tragedies and adversity. And, when you listen to the rest of the program, just addressing someone in the chat, we had a question. You really do get, I think you're very inspirational, Lanai, because what you've gone through, you know, you just that, it's the mustard seed, they're sprouting, you know, the spiritual energy in you just kept sprouting and just sprouting and just sprouting, you know?
You know, sometimes reality isn't friendly, and sometimes reality, you just want to close it off, but unfortunately, you can't do that. And as I say, life goes on. And to keep your sanity, you've got to roll with the flow.
Because
I'd like for somebody else that was a lot weaker than me, I would love to see how they handle what I've been through.
But see, obviously you were meant to, and also with that energy that you have, that strength that you have, you're able to communicate that, whether it's in your books or coming on a program like this or, you know, speaking. And, you know, that energy, that tenacity, that willpower is being transmuted to people.
Well, I thank my mom a lot for that. Because she taught me, even though she died when I was 8, if I believed in something to go, you know, reach for the stars, and that's what I did. And I still do. Because according to her, if you've got the determination and the will, impossible, that's not the meaning of the word does not exist. You can do anything.
You can do anything. How, when you started, just walk me back a little bit on the first book that you in the series that you began writing. What did you have an idea or an intention for the book, or did you just start writing and think, wow, I'm being guided in this whole other area?
I had the idea that I wanted to write about Atlantis, and I got my thoughts together when I first started writing the novels, so my mind wouldn't become overwhelmed. I make an outline of the book, an outline of the chapters, and, you know, like ABC under the outlines of the chapters of what I was going to hit on in each chapter. And the more I wrote, the better I got. And now I don't even use outlines. The whole Atlanta series is finished. And I've even almost finished my next novel. This was a little bit different. It's called Prey of the Scavenger. My scavenger is a serial killer that practices hoodoo.
So in a way, you're kind of taking everything that you experience to some degree and fictionizing it or novelizing it, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah. And I've even got my next book figured out. I cannot give the title. That's the secret.
Okay.
But the book itself is going to be about Hitler's fictitious illegitimate grandson.
Ooh.
It'll be good. It's going to be sci-fi. I won't say that much.
You think it's going to... Where do you get these ideas?
Everywhere. Everywhere. Everything I touch, see, hear, feel. You know, I get ideas. And I was an only child, and of course I've got a vivid imagination. Very vivid. That helps. But no.
Of course we know that imagination is coming from being dialed in.
If we survive 2012, I've got a novel planned they're going to write on Titanic. Many don't know that when she went down in her cargo, she was carrying a mummy. And I want to do it through the eyes of the mummy's curse. Now, say I'm morbid, okay? Or weird, as my husband says.
How often do you write when you're writing your books? Is it hours at a time? Is it
No.
You set a schedule, or does it just come through?
Maybe half an hour to an hour. I don't want to get burnt out. And
okay.
I write a little by little. Next novel I'm working on, I've been working on it since January. I'm about finished with it. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I want to ask, your Atlantis, the Skulls of Salvation, why, you're speaking of the crystal skulls.
Yes.
Why or how do you feel they are salvation? Do you feel somehow they hold the key?
Just say that I use the skulls to help defend the earth against the prophecy.
Say that again. Now, somehow you would.
I use the skulls to help defend the earth against the prophecy.
Ooh. All right.
See, I incorporated that.
Okay.
And what better way to get over what the skulls do than the title is self-explanatory.
So is it reconnecting to the skulls and bringing them out and forward in the they say they're going to be brought in a configuration around the world. There are sacred sites high up, plateau, some are pyramids, there's different sites that they're going to be part of that configuration. Is that part of what you're meaning? Or
no, my skulls, everything takes place in Belize. In my book. And the skulls just help with global warming and the ozone layer. That's all I can say. If I say more than that, I give
away.
You gotta
read the book. You gotta That's read right. the book. You got me. You got me, Lanai. You got me.
As I say, you read
me,
it.
Lanai.
You've got to finish the series because you'll be hooked. What I did when I used to read all the time when I was younger, like in high school and stuff. And I tried to make my books what I thought a good author should make their books about. And that is subjects that are hardly ever touched on. And your reader not wanting to put the book down. And that's what I think I achieved with the series. Because if you read one, you've got to read the next one.
Okay, so you have to read. Now, someone has put in the chat, we just put, let me see, Crystal, that always goes back to Belize, where she is drawn. So can you just touch on Belize? Why do you feel that it is Belize?
Because that's where the Mayan flourished. The rainforest in Belize.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Palenque is. That's one of the major Mayan cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the Temple of Incantations, that's in Belize. I mean, need I say more? Anything Mayan, you got to believe. I mean, and think about it. Where I think Atlantis was is not that far from Belize.
Okay. Atlantis not far from Belize. Now, do you feel Atlantis is other dimensional now?
I do.
Yeah.
Albert Einstein, himself. Albert Einstein now, the smartest man ever lived, so they say. For every known dimension, there is an innumerable amount of unknown dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I believe the Bermuda Triangle is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vortex to another dimension. There's several on this planet.
Yeah.
That's just
My perception, my experience has been also with the Mayans that they're other dimensional. Because believe me, when you tap into their energy or they tap into yours, I mean, even more than the angelic realm, you can really feel them and see them. I don't think they're dead or disappeared.
Okay,
I've got
one more question I'm going to present to you. Do you feel anything special about me since you've talked to me?
Oh, of course.
What do you feel?
And I alluded to it already, of being a starseed.
I'm not going to go that far, but I'm intuitive. Have you ever heard of a child born with a veil?
Yes.
You're talking to one.
I was. Both of them. Take one, so no one.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Because, I'm just now to the place, a couple of years, that I've been trying to develop this intuitiveness I have. And at first it scared me to death, but I'm not scared of it anymore. I guess you mellow as you age. I don't know.
Well, I think just my little perception, I just think that the time is right for you right now. The people are there, the audience is there, those that you need to reach. And even if you look at what we've been going through economically or on a social level, the adversity that you've overcome is a great story for people to hear, or adversities, chunks of them that you've had. Your adversity, you're awakening from that, you taking the spiritual energy and strength that you have within you and moving forward, I think that that's something that a lot of people really need to hear. Because to me, you're saying it's possible. It's possible.
Look, I'm proof I'm alive. I'm alive.
Yeah.
I've got a good attitude. I'm proof. You can overcome.
You can overcome, and you've also tapped into, this other aspect or other part of you. And I think that's really important. It's one thing for people to overcome, but you've overcome and became more empowered by it as well.
Everybody has the ability. I guess I've just got to be pushed enough to, there's got to be something better.
You're a little empowerment pusher.
There you go. I'm a Taurus. I'm a bull. I'm stubborn. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, and my husband just said I'm hard-headed. So.
Well, it's
but
paying
that's
off.
A good thing.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing, really. Because I will not be mowed down.
Yeah.
You're going to have to put me 6 feet under before that, I guess.
Yeah, Lenny is saying in the chat, I hope she comes out and reaches out in her area with all of her gifts. Wow, that's great.
Well, whoever said that, thank you very much. You don't know how much that means.
Yeah. Now, let's, because we're winding down here, Lanaya, obviously on your website, where can people also find the book?
Okay, all you need to do is go to my website. And that's www.lanaiaslair, that's LanaiasLair.com. Go to the home page. There you can get the books. There's a direct link to where the books are available. So you need to.
Thank you so much for being on a week. It's really been a gift. And a joy to be with you today.
And I do thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy this.
Okay. You got an open invite.
Well, just put this. Okay, book two's out now. You have to have me on next year, book three comes out.
Okay,
2011, book four, and the beginning of 2012, book five. So.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being on the program. And we've
thank
been speaking.
You
thank you. With Lanaya Lee, author of Skulls of Salvation, a wonderful series of books, a little bit of truth woven in there, or maybe a lot of truth. Thank you, listeners, for being part of this converging flow, making awakenings what it is. Awakenings is what it is because of all of you. And I appreciate all of you listening and participating and all your input and insight. Until next time, just continue to shine your light, share your insight, and keep awake.